Welcome to Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You, the podcast that focuses on Christians that are active in everyday life. Join in as we speak to everyone from successful business owners to educators to athletes about their faith and how it helps them reach out and revolutionize those around them to do the same. And now get ready to roar with your host, the voice of manifestation, John Fuller.
Hey, Roar Nation, John Fuller here, and I am fired up on this bright, sunny, dry day in Amarillo, Texas. Okay, that being said, I am fired up, and because I have a hot topic that we are going to discuss, I hope that catches your attention, because it should. That being said, Katie Ganschert, are you ready to rock this thing?
I am so ready to rock this thing, John. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, so Roar Nation, Katie is a Midwest gal who's passionate about Jesus, her family, adoption, writing, and grace. When she's not plotting her next novel, she enjoys going on ice cream dates with her husband, playing with her kids, and chatting with her girlfriends over coffee and bagels. She could talk books all day and absolutely loves connecting with her readers. All right, Katie, I just skimmed the surface of your bio. I want to hear more about you and your passions.
Yeah, so me and my passions. So obviously a huge passion of mine is telling stories. And, you know, I feel like storytelling is a great way to get to people's hearts and a great way for me to explore my own heart. So a huge passion of mine is just storytelling. Obviously storytelling that brings in faith and, you know, encourages readers in their faith or challenges readers in their faith. And then besides that, I'm very passionate about, and I know we're going to talk more about this, but, you know, racial justice, racial reconciliation, and that kind of stuff, especially as it pertains to the church today. So, yeah.
Amen, man. We're going to split some hairs on that one today, I promise. That'll be good. I'm excited about that. Okay. What on your journey, and we'll dive into all of the things that you're going to, obviously your book and the journey and some of the stuff, but through your life, has there been like an inspirational scripture that you have really just kind of stood on, or do you have one for this season that you're going through in life?
I don't feel like there's just been one that's carried me through, but the one that keeps calling to my heart right now is Isaiah 1:17, and it's just, learn to do good, seek justice, correct oppression. Then it goes on to say, you know, bring justice to the fatherless and plead the widow's cause. And I just feel like I've been, that speaks to my heart so much. I love that it even says learn to do good. Like, it's not just this thing we know, but yeah, learn to do good. Yeah. So that one's been really speaking into my life lately.
I don't think I've ever asked this question to any of my guests, but why? Like, what? I mean, it's speaking to you, but what? Why do you feel like it's speaking to you?
I think because of where my heart has been and the journey the Lord has brought me on when it comes to, you know, this particular issue that is feels like a hot button issue right now in our culture, in our society, and how it's so intricate to the gospel. Like, it's not removed from the gospel, this issue of justice. And so I feel like it's really Jesus's heart and God's heart, and, or, you know, part of their hearts. And so I don't know. I think it just encourages me along the way when I'm feeling discouraged.
Absolutely. And I'm just going to say, dang right, it's God's heart. I mean, man, we're all God's creation. I mean, it's not even part, man. God is, it says he's justice and he is love.
Yes.
And he loves his creation. So racism and those things have nothing to do with the church. Well, maybe the church, but when I say the church are people, but it has nothing to do with God.
Right. And so, and actually, another one that really encourages me too, and this is probably more popular, like a more well-known verse, but by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. And I just keep going back to that one too.
Okay. Before we jump into your book and stuff, what got you, because we're all about finding purpose and passion, and you talked about you love to tell stories and stuff. What got you down that road to start writing and telling stories?
Yeah. I always wrote stories as a little girl. Like, that was something I don't remember never doing. I was the little girl in my bed who would just fill up notebook after notebook with stories. And
like, you know, made them up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And my mom has like a box of them, like of like notebooks in her basement still, that I need to probably go get from her basement. But yeah, so I've always had that desire to not only write stories, but to share them, because I would go on to read them out loud to my parents. And I think that is basically the heart of any author, is not just writing stories, but sharing those stories. And so I always kind of did that. But then when I got into high school and you get to that period of time where all of a sudden your dreams should be more realistic, right? Like you should, you know, being a superhero when you grow up is no longer a thing.
Time out on that one. Okay. So let me ask you that, because I have young listeners. At what age were you thinking, and is that even realistic? You said that, right. But now you can look back hindsight. So keep going on that.
Yeah. So it was definitely in high school. And I remember a couple things. I remember, you know, the danger of comparison. I remember being in a writing class and I had I was a junior, I think, and this girl was a senior and she read, I don't even remember what it was. I just remember it was some creative writing piece and she read hers and I was like, whoa, I cannot write like that. Like it was so good. And I remember thinking, I can't do that. And then at the same time, what are you going to do in college? What do you want to, you know? And I didn't know anyone who was making a living as a writer. That wasn't something no one did that.
It seems like a whole other level, right? You're like, people actually do that, but I don't know anybody.
Right. And so I just kind of let that dream slip away. But I had other interests too. So I went to college to be a teacher and I did. I taught for 4 years, but I taught fifth grade, elementary school.
Okay.
So yeah. English would have been a good fit, and then it wasn't until I actually went to Kenya for this 3-week HIV AIDS outreach through our church. We just went and served basically the AIDS community in Kenya. And when I got back from that trip, I just had like a story exploding inside of me. And I sat down and that's when I wrote, I was probably like 23 or 24, and I wrote my first full-length novel. And then I kind of kept going.
Man, you really sparked my interest on the Kenya deal. So an AIDS community, I don't know. I've never heard that.
Well, that was a weird thing to say, community, probably, but just we went to go.
A group AIDS, of people, yeah.
Yes, like people who were suffering and needed medical treatment but couldn't get medical treatment and stuff like that. So we went with like a team of doctors and nurses, and I wasn't either of those things. But I was able to just go and, you know, help with logistics and stuff.
Was that pretty eye-opening for you?
Oh, wow. Very. Incredibly.
Just curious. I know we're going back years, but I mean, what was a takeaway from that when you left?
Oh, I think maybe not so much a takeaway as this like memory that is forever burned inside of my brain. And I remember sitting with this one woman, and she was, you know, in all likelihood going to die very soon of AIDS. Her husband had left her, and I think her sister had died of AIDS, and she had like 6 kids and in this little tiny tin house. And I remember sitting with her just talking, and she was like lit up. And I remember her like preaching to me about like where she was going to go, you know, going home, and just how she has hope. And I mean, just I've never seen someone so lit up and but their body so racked with sickness. And it was like she ministered to me way more on that trip than I could have ever hoped to minister to her. So
isn't that weird? Like, I can't tell you how many mission trips and things that I've gone on thinking like I was going to go, quote unquote, save somebody or something. You know, we have these stupid thoughts, but
stupid. Yeah.
Like I'm going to go help or something. And then all of a sudden it's like I get radically ministered to. My takeaway. It was like really I got filled by going and trying to serve. And anyways, it's like reverse.
Yep, totally.
Okay. So you had mentioned you were a school teacher for a couple of years. You write this novel, but you're a teacher. Where did you make the transition from going to teacher to writer? Because that's a huge transition. I mean, you're talking career shift.
Yeah. You know, I taught for 4 years and I would get up at 4 a.m. I think about this. I'm like, how did I have that discipline? I mean, I guess the Lord, I would get up at 4 a.m. I would do my quiet time, and then I would spend a good 2 hours writing before I went and taught at school. And so I wrote like 3 or 4 books that way.
Wow.
And it wasn't until, so I got a literary agent. That's a huge step for
a writer. Okay.
Yep. You get a literary agent because you can't, I mean, things have changed a lot now with like self-publishing or independent publishing. You can kind of get your work out there yourself now. But back then it kind of had a stigma to it because it was like, oh, if you self-publish, then it's just you can't get a publisher. However, that's really changed big time. But back then, it was also super expensive. Just like you had to fork up all this money to publish your book. So I knew I didn't want to go that route. I wanted to get picked up by a publisher. And in order to do that, you have to get a literary agent. So I was shopping my books around to literary agents. This is still while I was teaching. Okay. And then I got a literary agent, which was like a huge milestone moment. It was really, you know, kind of that mountaintop, one of those mountaintop moments.
Yeah.
And then it took like a whole nother year before she could sell my stuff to a publisher. She sold it to an imprint of Penguin Random House, the Christian imprint of Penguin Random House.
We like those people.
Yeah, I like them quite a lot. And so that was a huge dream come true. And it was, so I signed the contract in 2011. My first book, my first novel came out in 2012. And 2011 was the year that I went to my principal and I resigned because my husband and I had talked. And we had a 2-year-old son at the time, and it was just too much. Something had to give. And I knew, obviously, being a wife and a mother wasn't going to give, nor did I want it to. And writing was my passion. So yeah, I resigned from teaching, and it was quite the transition.
You know what I love about your story is you worked for it. So I think so many times people don't realize, and I call it a side hustle, which is like now you can almost hashtag that, I guess. But you literally, sometimes you get, I don't want to say stuck, but we do careers maybe necessarily we don't love, but we're in because that's what provides and makes money. Mm-hmm. But if you want to pursue what you love, sometimes you have to be willing to do what you did, which is get up at 4 a.m. and write until it worked itself out, which took years. But let me ask you this. Right. Was it worth it?
100% worth it. Yeah, it was. And I mean, you know, like, yeah, it was. But it was a lot of work not getting paid for a really long time.
Yeah. But the dividends now have really paid off.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, it's so. Like if I wish I would have invested in Amazon like 10, 20 years ago, right?
Right. Oh my gosh. Same deal. Get me started on that. Yeah,
you and everybody else or Bitcoin, whatever. Okay. So in my hand right now, we're going to go on a journey. We're going to dig a little deep. And I'm holding in my hand right now a book that you wrote, said No One Ever Asked. And I'm assuming, I've skimmed through it, and I already told you this, the first chapter, it was a great hook. I literally read it and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have enough time to go read anymore right now. So very well done.
Thank you.
But that being said, I want to talk about the book.
Okay.
Let's dive into as much as you're willing to talk about.
Yeah. So do you want me to just give you a brief little kind of briefly generic what it's about?
Yeah. So why don't you give me a 30,000 foot view of it and then let's dive into as much of it as we can to make our readers go buy the book.
But
without giving away everything. Cause I do. Yeah. It's well written. So go for it.
Yep. This will be spoiler free. I promise. If you're a listener and you're not wanting any spoilers, I'll make sure that everything we talk about won't have spoilers. But so No One Ever Asked is about three very different women, and their lives are brought together when an impoverished school district loses its accreditation and the affluent community of Crystal Ridge really has no choice but to open their school doors. And it's a story that explores, you know, implicit bias impacting American society. It explores the invisible fences that keep us separated. And really, it kind of asks the question, what does it mean to be human? And it's also the very first novel I've written that's inspired by real events. So that was kind of fun.
Okay. Let's go in to what we had mentioned before we started the show. And I mentioned at the beginning, racial inequality, which is written in that book. So I want to dive into that, kind of where that journey has taken you and why.
Okay. Yeah. So really the journey started. So I have two kids. My son, Brogan, is 9 and he's our biological son, but we have a daughter. Her name is Salima and we adopted her from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And so international adoption is a weird thing. If anyone's done that, it takes a long time. It's very rare that it's a short process. And so it was in that in-between stage where we had legally adopted Salima. She was our daughter, but she wasn't home yet. And we lived in that stage for like 2 years.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah. So during that time, I had this daughter that I loved from afar. She was Black, and we were at the time living in a predominantly white community. And that's right around when Michael Brown happened and was shot and killed in Ferguson. And so all these riots started breaking out, we know, in the St. Louis area. And basically what happened for me, what started me on this journey, was that I heard this huge, massive outcry from the Black community. And I heard on the other side, this largely silence from the white community and from, honestly, you know, our, you know, Sunday is one of the most segregated hours in America. And so we go to a predominantly white church and silence even in the church. And it was a dissonance that really unsettled me. And so I really went on this journey of tuning into Black voices, the Black community, reading books written by Black authors, reading, you know, listening to podcasts, listening to sermons by Black pastors. And the more I listened, the more these scales that had been on my eyes really sort of fell. And I could see this injustice all around. And yeah, and you know, God calls us to remove yokes of oppression from our midst. And so it's just something that I've, and you know, that kind of, you talk about purpose, I really struggled with that. Like, okay, so here I've learned all this stuff. What do I do? Like, what can I actually do? And I, another thing I kept hearing from the Black community was, if you want to do something to fight against racial injustice, talk to your people about racial injustice. Because so many people just aren't aware. We just don't know what we don't know. And so I'm a writer, and I had heard this story that was that kind of caught my interest, which inspired the actual novel. And I decided to make it into a story and talk to my people via a book that I could share with readers. So,
okay. So as you talk, my brain's thinking, and because I have friends, pastors, people in our church, you know, Black, white, brown, whatever, I really don't care. It doesn't make a difference. But my question, and maybe blinded to it, and we've had this conversation with previous people, but here's my question. You made the comment, Sundays is one of the most segregated days of the week.
Yeah.
And here's my question, though, because I'm going to come at it as a devil's advocate, both sides. And okay, my question is it because white people don't want to be with Black people don't be with white people? Is it a color thing? Or maybe, is it cultural preference? Because I'm just thinking, I love going to Black churches, man. They're fun. They're, you know, they're charismatic. They're shouting. They're way funner to preach at, I can tell you that. And I enjoy that versus most. And I hate to use these terms, but I'm just saying, right, most churches that are, like, we'll call predominantly white.
Yeah.
Are less charismatic. They more just sit there. A lot of times they're not as fun to preach to because I can't even tell if, like, they're getting my message or not. But that being said, is it so much, do you think, color? And I'm asking you because, you know, you've studied maybe this within the community. Or is it not preference of maybe charismatic or not charismatic, or the way the preaching is or isn't? Those are things that I really want to address, because sometimes, yeah, I think we say, well, I don't go there because they don't come to our, Black people don't come to our church because, you know, they don't want to be around white people. And I'm like, ah, well, maybe not. Maybe it's because it's not exciting.
Right. I hear you. And I think here's my take on that.
Okay.
Okay. So I don't, obviously, I can't say this is a definitive, this is the answer.
Right. I'm sure there's and I all wanna, kinds of, yes, I want to yes, get that clear. This is a general broad assumption. We're not.
Right.
Every right, church exactly. is different, but just what we've seen.
Right. And there could be components of that. But here's what I know from listening to the Black community, that there is a lot of Black evangelicals who have felt very isolated and ignored in predominantly white churches, to the extent that there has almost been this mass exodus of Black evangelicals leaving predominantly white churches because they report feeling unseen and unheard. And I think that's because, as the white community, you know, it's very easy for us to say we don't see color because we live in the majority culture where most people are white, and we don't even see our whiteness and how that impacts the way we see the world. And so even though we don't see color, color is a reality that impacts the Black experience in America. And I think from our, you know, when something super traumatic happens to the Black community, like Philando Castile is shot and killed, and it's published, like it's recorded and put all over where people can watch this. And then you have people saying things like, well, you know, like just let's just wait to see what comes out, as if we can't mourn the death of a fellow image bearer. And nothing is addressed, really. These issues aren't talked about. They go into, or even like, you know, when Charlottesville happened with all the you know what I'm talking about with Charlottesville. Yeah. When like the alt-right and white supremacists were had a big thing, you know, this happens and it's super traumatic to the Black community. And then they walk into their church doors and nothing's addressed, nothing's said, and they walk in and what can they assume from that silence? You know, what does it say when we don't come alongside and take this burden and help lift it? I think oftentimes, and broad brushstrokes here, not all the time, but oftentimes the burden feels heavier sometimes in predominantly white churches. And so while there definitely could be issues of like preference for sure, all of that stuff, I do think we also have an issue of blindness to an extent that we need to start opening our eyes to so that we can be churches that are wonderfully diverse and that someone can go into our churches and not feel like the issues they're facing aren't seen or acknowledged. So that's what I've heard from a lot of people in the Black community. And I think that does contribute to our segregation.
Okay. So I'm not just a host, but I'm a listener. Okay.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is you brought up, you know, addressing it and being opening our eyes that we're blind. Mm-hmm. How can myself and listeners make that difference or make that change if it is happening, whether it's school or in our church or people around us? What can people do to make, because here's the thing, it's not just a Black issue or a white, and this is what I mean. We talked about this again before we started. I grew up in an all Hispanic neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I came from a farm. When in the community we were in, it was all predominantly white, as I remember as a young kid. And then we moved to the city, and we were poor, and I lived in the ghetto, and I got in a lot of fights, and because I was like the only white kid for blocks, and I didn't understand it at the time. Like, I was like, why am I getting picked on? Why are they wanting to fight me? Why are they calling me weto? And, mm-hmm. and all these things, I got called names and fights. And finally, I remember one day my dad said there was gang issues. There was a lot of people got shot and stabbed where we lived. And I remember my dad one day saying, he said, if you don't stick up for yourself and go fight them, because I didn't want to fight. It just wasn't me. And he said, until you do that, and I'm not saying this is the answer, but just is what happened. And his advice at the time, he said, until you stand up for yourself, he said, they're always going to pick on you. And I'll never forget the day that these two brothers walked in front of our house and they started calling me names. They were picking on me, wanting to fight me. And I was just like, I can't believe this is happening again. And in front of my house, and I turned around and my dad's just standing there just looking at me. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling like I have to do something. Like, it's what do you do? Like, that's such a weird, like, I felt like my manhood at the time, I've never even had this conversation with anybody in my life. So this is,
right. Now
this
is like, going out there,
yeah,
right?
We're just throwing out there. So it's really interesting, but I'm standing there and I remember thinking like, am I going to let my dad down or am I going to look like a total wuss and get picked on my whole life? And I remember I went out there and I was so mad and I just beat the crap out of this one kid, and his brother just looked at me and they ran and I never got picked on again. And it ended it, but that's not always the case for everybody. But I remember I still dealt with that all through high school. I mean, I was a jock and I was popular and all that stuff, but I still had to deal with it.
Yeah.
And how do you, well, that's not the answer, because fighting is not, I mean, that's not the answer. So I do want to make that clear.
Yeah. Okay. So just hearing you, and I think what you bring up, and I think this is a huge, so I'm gonna kind of flip it around and go to it, like, let that lead us into this whole idea of, I think there's a huge confusion in the church, I mean, in society, amongst white people, is this whole idea of racism. And I think we like to say, well, I've experienced it. Like, like in your case, you're like, well, I lived in a predominantly Hispanic place and I was treated poorly because I was white. So I think so we can use that to increase our empathy, right? But I think what's really important is broadening our understanding of when we're talking about, especially when we're talking about racial injustice, we have to think of it not as this mere individual overt prejudice, which is what you experienced, right? And anyone can experience that. But it's really what I've learned is it's collective misuse of power that results in diminished life opportunities for specific racial groups.
Yes.
Right. So it's this framework that understands that people don't even have to intend their actions to be racist, to contribute to racial division and inequality for their actions to actually do so. And so, yes, there's individual prejudice, there's individual overt acts of racism. But I think the issue that we need to start talking about and getting to are this collective use of misuse of power. Because as white people, I think we can get pretty defensive when we enter into this conversation, because we want to say, well, I'm not racist. I know I don't see color. All these things, or I've experienced racism, and that's horrible that you had to experience that. But I also think we need to get to that bigger understanding of power structures and how our past has led to these power structures that still exist now and that result in a lot of injustice. And so then, of course, the question is, okay, that's huge. What in the world could we even possibly do? Kind of like what you said, like, what is there to even do in the face of that? And I think a huge thing that we can do, and I know this is going to sound not necessarily good enough, is if you're white, start listening to people of color. Start tuning into Black voices. Matt Chandler is not white. I'm sure you know who Matt Chandler is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he gave this awesome sermon where he was basically saying we have to stop looking in the mirror. Like, we have to stop looking at people who look like us, who think like us, who are going to then validate what we already believe. But start tuning into people, Christians who are on the margins. It's so easy to do that now because you've got Twitter and you've got social media where you can follow these people. You can listen to sermons online. You can read books and all kinds of stuff. There's a documentary on Netflix called 13th that is so crazy eye-opening. It's insane. Latasha Morrison has this whole Be the Bridge group that you can follow and learn how to be a bridge toward racial reconciliation. So I think it goes a long way to educate ourselves so we even have the eyes to see injustice. Because we can't fight injustice unless we first see it. And then once we see it, then it becomes, I think we have to make it really small and bring it to our community and think about, okay, we're not going to eradicate racism. No one's going to do that until Jesus comes, right? Because racism is sin, and sin is going to continue on until Jesus comes and makes all things right. But we can go into our communities, into our area. And actually, this is kind of a tagline and no one ever asked. It's be the change where you're at. So in your community, what would that look like? Being aware of the issues that impact communities of color or communities, impoverished communities, whatever injustice it is, whether it's racial injustice or socioeconomic injustice or whatever, how can we be an agent of justice in our communities? And that's going to look different depending on where you live.
So I'm going to take in part 1 of your book. I love it. It says Newton's first law. Objects in motion stay in motion with the same speed and in the same direction unless acted upon by an unbalanced force.
Yeah.
And when I read that, I was thinking about what you were saying. And until we combat that from an opposite direction.
Yeah.
And in fight, you know, I'm going back to what I said, I got in a fight. But until we do it spiritually and love people, and we fight back with love in the way Jesus sees people, and we do it the right way, I think we'll never see a change that we need to see until we love people the way we're supposed to.
Amen.
You know, and there's a term that people use, and you mentioned it. People say, I'm colorblind.
Mm-hmm.
I have an issue with that, and let me tell you why. And I get what people are saying, but here's the...
I have an issue, too, I'm excited.
Yeah, here's the problem with that. Color is beautiful. Like, why should I be color... Like, I'm partly, in real life, I'm partly colorblind. I have certain issues with different colors, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So,
like, literally? You're literally colorblind?
Yeah, I'm literally colorblind. Oh, okay. I have issues with reds, blues, and greens. When they're together, they kind of mix. I have a hard time, like, they can overlap for me. So, that being said, what that means is I'm missing out on a beautiful color pigmentation that God created. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't get to see the fullness. It's one day I will, but I don't see the fullness of the beauty of the color because my eyes are skewed. And so many times people say, well, I'm colorblind. Well, the problem that I have with that is they're missing out on the beauty that God created within somebody. So if God created all things, then he created all colors. And the reason he did that is because we're all different in certain ways. And there's beauty within that. But the problem is people segregate themselves as if they're different instead of seeing the beauty about it. People want to point it out as if there's something wrong with it, and there is nothing wrong with it.
Right. I have to tell you this story, and it's not mine. And I'm like, of course, scrolling through Twitter really quick to see if I can find and give the right person the credit. But there was this big conference down during Martin Luther King's 50th anniversary, and it was MLK 50. It was put on by the Southern Baptist Convention. And okay, I just found it. Okay, I don't know how to say the name, but it was this guy on the panel. And basically he was one of the panels, and the guy was saying that his wife was with his daughter and they were in like a grocery store. And basically his daughter, like little girls and kids do, they just have no filter, said, you know, there was a black woman, and the daughter said, "Mom, why is that person a different color?" And loud, like the lady kind of turned around. And so I think there's a tendency in us to kind of, we could have been like, you know, don't talk about that. Not only are we're attaching shame almost to this idea that we don't talk about that. But so this is how the mom answered. And she said, "We're all made in God's image for God's glory. And one skin color was not sufficient to reflect God's glory." And
I was that's good.
The best answer ever. It's so true, though. It's just exactly what you said. So why would we shy away from that? And then, of course, the problem is that, you know, people like to say it's not a skin problem, it's a sin problem. And someone the other day said, well, yeah, it's a sin problem that has made skin a problem. And so, yeah, our sinful nature kind of muddies it up. But it's a beautiful thing, our different colors.
It is. So, listeners, I would love to get your perspective. If you want to join and jump on our Facebook and on our deal and post when we post this, I'd love to get stuff. And please don't put mean, derogatory stuff.
Yeah.
That's not the point. The point is obviously what Kay said, be the change. So mm-hmm. I would love to hear people's perspectives of stuff and how you want to change that. So I do invite you guys to jump on there. We'd love to hear from you. So, Katie, I want to ask you for what you do using your gifts. And I love this because you're using your gift that God gave you, which is writing, obviously to hit social injustice and the things that are going on right now. But that being said, what do you feel like your biggest strength is in what you do?
Oh, well, I always have a hard time talking about I can say what I think, what readers have said a lot over and over again, is it's taking issues, like hard issues that all of us as followers struggle with, whether it's completely doubting that God is even real, whether it's some sort of sin that really just is ugly and has a hold of us, you know, taking some very serious issues, like for example, and no one ever asked, there is an adoption storyline as well. And one of the main characters, Jen Covington, has adopted a little girl from Liberia. And, you know, most people, when they follow someone's adoption, when they see that child has come home, they see that as the happy ever after, right? Like, okay, they got their happy ending. The child is home in the family. But for almost every adoptive family, that's just the beginning. Like now we're in a battle for that child's heart. And so in No One Ever Asks, like this, that I take her homecoming is the beginning. And then I go on this journey with Jen, and it's not pretty. It's not pretty at all. It really dives into the reality of the struggle of adopting an older child who has very real trauma in their past. So I think that I'm able, God has given me the ability to dive into these very hard real life issues, but to infuse them with hope. So you're not left like, well, life is just hard, but where is the hope? How do we have hope in the midst of these hard things?
That's exciting. Hey, I do want to bring up, I thought it was interesting, and a lot of guests say this, and most people do. I did at one point, but we have a hard time saying like what we're good at.
I know.
But I want to bring that back to the thing that you said that mom said to that daughter in the store is, it's to God's glory.
Yes.
And so many times what we don't realize is we think, you know, that in church growing up, it was almost like a bad thing to be, there's good pride.
Right.
And I tell people, like, you should take pride in your gifts. If God gave you something and you're good at it, use it for His glory. Mm-hmm. And I think so many times we have a hard time saying, I'm good at this, because there's almost like this stigma, like, oh, I'm not supposed to say that.
Right.
But in all honesty, I almost feel like you should, like, if I'm good at it, I'm good at it because God gave it to me. Now, don't get me wrong. I could wake up tomorrow and suck at it.
Right.
But today I'm good at it. And if I give God glory in what I'm doing, then amen.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
So, okay. So now nobody ever has problems with this one. I'm going to ask you is what do you feel like your biggest weakness is?
Oh, yeah. You know how, like, sometimes your strengths can also be a weakness?
I usually say that to every guest, yes.
So I am a very passionate person. So when God puts something in my heart and I become very passionate about it, let's say a holy discontent about something, I can get very impassioned about it. And sometimes God is really working on me to be a good listener. You know what I mean? Like, so that I can just, I can always learn. And when I'm in a conversation with someone who maybe I might, and this is where pride comes in, where I might feel like I know more than that person when it comes to this issue that I'm so passionate about, there's still so much value in sitting and listening to that person. And sometimes God really has to rein me in and help me not just wait for my turn to talk, but to really listen to what that person's heart is saying.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, for anybody, I've had to learn the same thing. So I have a habit of cutting guests off myself just because I get so excited about something they're saying. What's the biggest thing right now that God is stirring inside of you that you're excited about? And that could be your book, the one that you come out with. Yeah.
It's this book. I mean, it really is. I'm honestly just blown away by God in how personal he's been in my life, because he has put this holy discontent in my heart about racial injustice, right? And for so long, I had this contract. I knew I had to write another book for my publisher. And I'm trying to, you know, this is rewind about a year and a half ago. I'm trying to write this book. It was a totally different story. And I could not pull my eyes away from all this particular injustice. And I'd read articles and I couldn't pull myself away. And then all of a sudden, and it was a distraction from my work. And then all of a sudden I listened to this one podcast about this real thing that happened in Missouri. And it hit me that like, I can make this into a book. Like I want to do something to help and speak into this issue of racial injustice. But what can I do? I'm a novelist. I write fiction. And then when he kind of married the two for me, and all of a sudden I could do this thing that I loved about this topic I was very passionate about. And my editor gave me the green light to do it. And now it's out there and I'm getting such amazing feedback from people who are saying, wow, this really opened my eyes, or this really, this challenged me in a good way. Or from, you know, other readers who are like, thank you for writing this and putting this out there, because it's been my experience. And so being encouraged in that way. And so I'm just super excited about the story and what God can do through it. So
heck yeah, I'm excited. And you know, I always forget to do this. So listeners, and I'm going to tell you this, your publishing company has been so gracious for the first three listeners. And I would highly encourage you to do this right now, because I always forget, and most people forget as well. But if you will email us on our website, we're actually giving away three of your books.
Nice.
To your listeners. So the publishing company did send us some stuff to send out. So that's awesome.
Awesome. That is great.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that. Okay. As we start to wrap up the show, I want to ask you, what has been, besides your book, or it could even be a hack, like a cool mom hack or whatever.
Okay.
But what is something recently that has that's impacted you that you would share with our listeners, whether it's a book or a mom hack or just anything?
Oh, man. I think, well, this might sound a little cliche, but and for people who aren't like early morning risers, but man, the value, this would be a mom hack. I am such a better mom when I actually get up early before my kids and have some time to just kind of read my Bible, you know, drink some coffee before the day just kind of explodes.
Yeah,
the moment I wake up, instead of my kids are in my face right when I wake up, but I have some time to just wake up and ease into the day and, you know, kind of get my heart before the Lord. And I know that sounds super like cliche, because we hear it all the time, the importance of that kind of stuff, but it is just proven to be true over and over again in my life. The drastic difference in my day when I make time for that is really, you would think that I would always do it, but I still struggle. But
oh yeah, no, I agree with you, man. That is awesome advice. I can tell a huge difference in my wife and myself when we're able to do that. So, okay, here is the Back to the Future question. We are going back to the younger you.
Okay.
You know all the things that are going to happen in your life, but you can't tell your younger you what is going to happen, but you can give yourself advice. a pep talk. Maybe actually for you, you might even write the younger you a novel.
Oh, man.
You even think about that. I've never even brought that up. So you can write yourself a letter. What age would you go back to and what would you tell yourself?
Okay, so that is tricky because, of course, there's multiple ages. We would love to go back and be like, you know, but I think
junior high sucks. Just letting you know.
I think, though, I'm going to skip all of that because if I even tried to go back and talk to my junior high or high school self, I don't think I'd listen to myself. I'd be like, whatever, I'm not going to listen to you. I would go to my 22-year-old self. And so I got married when I was 22. And I would say, before I was married, and I would say, essentially, it's going to be crazy. Like, your life is not going to, like, again, just even if I saw a picture of my family, if someone showed me a picture of my family when I was 22, and I see this little black girl, I would have been like, what? Like, that I didn't expect that. So just all the twists and turns and with writing and everything. And I would tell myself to enjoy the journey and stop worrying because you are going to waste so much energy on worrying. And it does nothing. It literally, God really means what he says when he says, do not worry about tomorrow. What is it going to do? It's not going to add a single day to your life. It probably takes days off of our life, honestly. And so there's been, you know, just the journey of getting our daughter home and she's got some special needs and all this stuff. And I wouldn't tell myself it's all going to work out, but I would say, don't worry. God's going to sustain you through all this stuff. And, you know, don't ruin the joy by worrying about tomorrow. So.
Amen to that. I don't know where I've heard this. I've said it for years, so I've pretty much just like claimed it as my own, which I don't think it is. But I heard somebody say one time, they said, worry is like a rocking chair.
I've heard it too. I love that.
Yeah, it keeps you busy, but you never get anywhere.
You never get anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a good one. Okay. You gave yourself advice. Now, as we wrap up, last thing, what piece of parting advice would you give my listeners?
I would give them the advice of let's do a really good job of loving each other. Kind of what we've talked about. Like let's get uncomfortable for love and let's get sacrificial for love so that the watching world can see and God can be glorified and we'll look different like we're supposed to look different. And when I say get uncomfortable for love, I mean let's really be willing to lay down our agenda and hear what the person who's trying to speak to us is trying to say and figure out how can we love that person, not defend ourselves or not get, you know, worried about how we're going to come across or what's being threatened for us personally, but how can we just love that person across from us and how different would it all look if we really did that?
Amen to that. Great advice. All right, Katie, how do we find you, your books, Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff? How do we find you?
I'm really easy to find. So I'm on Twitter, just at Katie, you know, the @ Katie Ganchert. I'm assuming you'll have it written down somewhere.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And then my website is just www.katieganchert.com. And you can email me at katie@katieganchert.com. So it's all pretty simple stuff. I have a Facebook author page too, which is under Katie Ganchert. So pretty easy to find.
Cool. We love simple. Well, Katie, I want to tell you, thank you so much for taking the time. Just, I love your heart about what you're writing about. And I'm really excited to see that you're using the gift that God's given you. One, you get to do it because you love it. And two, you get to make a change in the world and bring light into a dark place with issues.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Hold on just a second as we wrap up. Roar Nation, thank you guys so much for tuning in. I hope you loved it. And I want to ask you guys if you would jump in on iTunes and rate and review us, but please leave a response. I love to read them. They're encouraging. And I also will start reading those back again on the show. And if you're looking for purpose, we are about to finish our beta test for people looking to find purpose. We've about wrapped it up. We got, I think, a couple weeks left. And as we do that, we're going to launch it again, a second one. So if you're interested, reach out, let us know. And one last thing, we do have the book DIY Remodel Your Life, what actually helps you find purpose, and that is on our front page of our website. So, Roar Nation, I love y'all. Be blessed, and remember, be real, be authentic, and be you. God bless.
That's all for this episode of Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You. Be sure to go to rureal.org for your free questionnaire to identify your gifts and talents and how you can use them to help people become leaders and catapult them into their destiny to help others become the leaders of tomorrow. We appreciate you spending your time with us and look forward to helping you reach out and revolutionize next time on Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You.